hear argument now in the case of EdgeNet against Home Depot.
May it please the Court.
Mr. Levenstein.
May it please the Court. The District Court held that when EdgeNet issued a no-cost license to help its customer, Home Depot, with a small project in Canada, EdgeNet included in that license a provision saying that if Home Depot should stop using EdgeNet services in part or in whole, then Home Depot could purchase for only $100,000 the right to copy and use the product collection taxonomy and attributes that EdgeNet had spent over $25 million and 60 person years developing. Not only that.
Mr. Levenstam, I have an antecedent question about this case, one that the briefs don't discuss.
Yes, sir.
Which is, I don't understand what it's doing in federal court. Both parties, I gather, are Delaware corporations. There's no diversity. And yet the only issue that is being briefed in this court is a question of contract construction. So what are we doing here?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that this is a legitimate infringement action, copyright infringement action subject to exclusion.
I understand you believe that, but this circuit has adopted Judge Friendly's conclusion in TB Harms against Eliscu that a dispute about the meaning of a copyright license is not a case arising under the copyright laws. I mean, that's what the Second Circuit held in 1964. We have repeatedly concluded that that is the law of the Seventh Circuit, too. And the parties' briefs simply ignore the question of subject matter jurisdiction. But I don't understand how, assuming that we are going to follow TB Harms, there can be jurisdiction.
Well, Your Honor, I'm aware of the cases that you're talking about.
I hope so. They're taught in first year in most law schools and in Fed Jur if they're not taught in first year.
Well, I will confess that first year of law school for me is some years ago now. But be that as it may, it seems to me.
We all discuss whether it was before 1964 when TB Harms was issued.
But be that as it may, it seems to me inappropriate and too great of a stretch to take those cases and say that when we plead a copyright infringement action, any assertion by the defendant that it has a license that defeats our copyright infringement suddenly throws us out of federal court and deprives us of the remedies provided by the infringement.
That sounds like a reason to disagree with TB Harms, but it doesn't sound like a reason why, assuming that this court is going to follow TB Harms, which we've said we do, why there is jurisdiction. Right. The holding of TB Harms is that if the party's real dispute is about the meaning of a contract, that is, a copyright license, then the case does not arise under the copyright laws.
But that seems to me to be too broad.
It is the holding of TB Harms, right?
Yes, I understand.
You think we shouldn't follow TB Harms.
I understand. But my point is that the Constitution and Congress bestowed exclusive jurisdiction upon the federal courts in copyright matters.
I'm well aware of that.
And we pleaded on the well-pleaded complaint a copyright claim, which is not challenged in terms of the sufficiency of the claim.
You cannot stipulate to jurisdiction in federal court, as I'm sure you well know.
I do know that, Your Honor.
Failure to contest jurisdiction is irrelevant. We have a duty to inquire into subject matter jurisdiction at every stage of the case, whether or not the lawyers have paid any attention to it. And here we are.
Well, Your Honor, My point on jurisdiction is...
Well, it's clear that you are not prepared to talk about this, and I will bet anything that Mr. Bierig is not prepared to talk about it either. So perhaps at the end of the case, we'll call for supplemental briefs on this question.
That's fine, Your Honor. That's fine. My opponent's brief did say our jurisdictional statement was complete and correct.
Right. Your jurisdictional statement didn't discuss this, and neither did theirs.
Well, back to my copyright infringement claim. Based on this license for $100,000, they claim that my client gave them complete use for whatever purpose, not only of the present but of all future versions of this product collection taxonomy and the attributes never mentioned in that agreement. And I believe that the fact of the matter is that the agreement so plainly does not cover this situation that we don't have the jurisdictional issue, but I'll proceed with my merits argument and be happy to brief the jurisdictional argument later. The district court concluded that EdgeNet had decided to reward customer infidelity so richly on a motion to dismiss that it granted with prejudice and without even giving EdgeNet a single chance to replead. But its decision rested on a fundamental misreading of that agreement, that license agreement. The court simply misread the license grant completely and based his broad ruling on the scope of that agreement upon language included in the license grant to demonstrate what was not a part of the license, and that is particularly the display taxonomies that Home Depot already owned and we certainly didn't license. Nevertheless, time and again, issue and again, the district court returned to the phrase about the display taxonomies to demonstrate the breadth of this agreement, and that was just plain error. As I indicated, the December 2006 SOW did not license display taxonomies or multiple taxonomies at all. It licensed the product collection taxonomy, singular. And when you read the license grant and license restrictions provisions together, as you have to do, you come to the conclusion, the inevitable conclusion, that it was only the product collection taxonomy that existed as of that date. The court itself indicated, quote, at best for EdgeNet, the license is silent as to whether Home Depot could use future versions of the product collection taxonomy. That's at A29. But the court did not hold that silence on the subject of future use meant no future use, and the court did not hold that silence on the subject of future use meant that the contract was ambiguous. Rather, he fell back on this display taxonomies language to hold that it included all future versions. But if you look at the license restrictions provision, paragraph 2B in particular, it's clear. It says client may continue to use the pre-existing product collection taxonomy perpetually as long as it continues its relationship with EdgeNet under Section 2A above. If the client ceases the relationship under 2A, then the client has the option to license the product collection taxonomy if it pays EdgeNet a one-time fee of $100,000. And I'd also reference the fact that paragraph 2B incorporates from the content services agreement the definition of intellectual property, which also excludes extensions, modifications, and revisions of intellectual property. Those get added into the mix for the content services agreement with the term software tools, a term that the 2006 SOW never uses. Furthermore, if you go beyond that to the next paragraph, Section 3, which is entitled Updates, now that says that EdgeNet is under no obligation to provide any updates. And furthermore, it indicates that EdgeNet will answer questions under the data collection process and help map under a different agreement and different SOWs. So clearly the parties were indicating that there would be future agreements if Home Depot wanted to expand its use of the product collection taxonomy here. Now, Home Depot tries in its brief on appeal to distinguish Section 3 because Section 3 says the word project rather than product collection taxonomy. But this seems clearly to be an error, a Scrivener's error, because there are no reference in the license grant or restriction of the license to anything called a project collection taxonomy. And, in fact, it makes no sense for the parties to be agreeing about whether there will be updates to a taxonomy that is not the subject of the license in this agreement, and nor does it make sense to be discussing whether there will be warranties to a taxonomy that is not the subject of this license. At a bare minimum, the fact that the word project appears in place of product creates an ambiguity that meant that the dismissal was error here. And furthermore, it is important to note that this agreement never references the attributes portion of the copyrighted work, and that is a significant part of the copyrighted work. It's a significant part of what Home Depot copied in violation of the of our copyright, in infringing our copyright. And here again, the district court made a mistake, a very substantial fundamental mistake, in reading the agreement. And by deciding that attributes made reference only to the characteristics of the underlying products. The record here is, of course, thin because this was a motion to dismiss, but it is clear from the record that attributes actually talks about a portion of the system, not the system, the taxonomy that EdgeNet put together based on its experience. And what it did is it decided upon, of all the characteristics that the products that it was collecting and organizing had, it decided which of those characteristics would be relevant, and then it determined how it wanted those characteristics described, and then it standardized and normalized the manner in which suppliers submitting information about their products were able to submit this information so that it could all be inputted into the computerized project registry and fed to Home Depot on the data feeds in a fashion that made it all usable. So the district court was really way off base in concluding that attributes were simply product characteristics that were not subject to a copyright. Now, it seems clear from the just the reading of this contract that it has nothing to do with the 2008 copyrighted master collection taxonomy and attributes. And for that reason, this case should be reversed. But if, despite all of these reasons, this court were to conclude that the December 2006 statement of work could be read to include in the scope of its license the updated future taxonomy of circa 2 years and more after the license, then the dismissal must still be reversed because that contract is ambiguous, because it is certainly a reasonable reading that the license did not extend that far. And in support of this position, I'd like to direct this court's attention to the Delaware Supreme Court's decision in Hewlett-Packard, where it reversed the dismissal of a license agreement lawsuit because there was an unclarity in whether the product was a Hewlett-Packard product if it had been prepared by a joint venture of Hewlett-Packard and ST Microsystems. Now, furthermore, even if this license agreement could be read to include, it had to be read to include future versions, reversal is still necessary because when Home Depot stopped using our data pool services in Canada, it activated the option from Section 2B and 5 of the 2006 Statement of Work, which imposed an obligation to purchase a $100,000 license if it wanted to continue to use the product collection taxonomy, or to immediately cease using that taxonomy and destroy all copies of it. Now, Home Depot takes from the manner in which the contract is drafted that it had as much time as it wanted to continue using this license without having to pay anything, and that's simply not the case. The immediacy requirement of the cessation and destruction obligation belies the position that Home Depot takes here. Clearly, at that point, the no-cost license terminated, and it was without a license at the point in time in which it started copying.
But didn't EdgeNet continue to supply confidential information about the taxonomies after being aware of the termination of the Canadian?
Well, it's not clear about the awareness, but what is clear is that EdgeNet had an ongoing relationship under the contact services agreement that was substantially larger than and different from. I mean, that was the main body of the relationship, and that had not been breached, and that they still had to service, and that's what they were doing. And as the contract alleges, starting with
How is that service different than what they're providing under the?
Well, SOW. All they provided under the SOW was a license for, and of course the record isn't very full on this because under ZCEM we didn't have to plead around a defense here, but. All we did was provide a license to what was then the existing product collection taxonomy so they could use it not for the purpose of collecting the product information, but for a computer upgrade program that they were doing with another company in Canada. Now, the collection process that was the main part of our relationship, when that's what we were doing under the content services agreement, involved taking all the information from the suppliers and doing everything that I said about organizing it by the attributes, attaching it to the taxonomy, and then sending the data feeds to EdgeNet. And that's what was going on. And during that period of time, after January of 2008, we were continuing to fulfill our obligations under the content services agreement. I mean, the license agreement didn't make us do anything. We didn't do anything. They weren't paying us anything. It was just us letting them use what was at that time the product collection taxonomy. So, and as we allege in paragraphs, 65 through 100 or so, at that point in time, they started using the fact that we were servicing them under the content services agreement as a way of getting information that they were, without telling us, using to copy our copyrighted materials. And that was a violation. They didn't have a license at that point in time. So I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are some questions.
The counsel. Mr. Berry.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jack Beerig for Home Depot and James Musial. The issue on this appeal is whether a December 18, 2006 Statement of Work, or SOW, between EdgeNet and Home Depot USA.
SOW is an adult female pig.
Right, it is.
If you would just refer to this as the contract, I think we would all be better off.
Okay, we'll do so, Your Honor. The question is whether the contract unambiguously gives Home Depot a license to use the product collection taxonomy, which is the basis for EdgeNet.
If, as you say, that is the issue, then there's no subject matter jurisdiction. Perhaps you would address jurisdiction first.
Yes. I would cite, Your Honor, to the decision of this court in the Kennedy case, the detention versus Kennedy, in which the allegation was of copyright infringement. The defense was that there was a license, and the Seventh Circuit, an opinion by Judge Bauer.
It doesn't matter who writes decisions of this court.
I wasn't suggesting it was.
If you weren't suggesting that, why did you mention the name?
just to try to be complete. In any event, the case resolves the defense of a license as a defense to a claim in the complaint of copyright. So that would be, I would just cite, Your Honor, to that case, which is 187 F3rd at 690.
Did we discuss TB Harms?
I think my recollection of TB Harms, Your Honor, is...
Now, would you answer my question? Did that case discuss TB Harms?
It did not.
Now, it is sometimes the case that jurisdictional issues don't get the attention they deserve, as indeed, to go by the party's briefing, this case would have been decided with no attention paid to jurisdiction. But the issue has now been identified, so we have to talk about it.
Well, I think TB Harms doesn't involve a situation in which the well-pleaded complaint alleges a copyright violation and the one of the defenses is that there's a license. That would be my answer in a nutshell, Your Honor. If that's unacceptable, I agree with Your Honor that we should probably have supplemental briefing, but I think that's the distinction here.
We will certainly have supplemental briefing.
Okay. In any event, moving along, I believe that it is significant that EdgeNet itself recognizes, both in its brief and its reply brief, that the 2006 contract unambiguously grants Home Depot a license to the product collection taxonomy, at least as it stood in December of 2006. EdgeNet argues, however, that the license that it acknowledges to have been unambiguously conferred by the 2006 contract does not cover the 2008 master collection taxonomy and attributes. It bases that argument on the proposition that the product collection taxonomy as it stood in December of 2006 and that taxonomy as it stood in 2008 are, in its words, quote, separate works. That, we would submit, is a rather remarkable proposition. First, it is in direct conflict with the allegations of the complaint. Those allegations make clear that there is a single evolving taxonomy. For example, in paragraph 24, EdgeNet alleges that since January of 2006, it spent over 60 person years in building its proprietary collection taxonomy, singular. The complaint does not allege and cannot allege that EdgeNet ever told Home Depot that EdgeNet had a new work that Home Depot had to license. On the contrary, the complaint alleges a series of events that lead to the conclusion that there was one product collection taxonomy.
Well, that argument really begs the question about whether the contract confers a license over the evolutionary additions of the taxonomy, to use the phraseology that you're adopting.
That's true, Your Honor. That is the question. Did the 2006 contract grant a license to use the taxonomy as it was frozen in time in 2006 or as it might evolve? I'll try to answer Your Honor's question. A careful reading of the contract demonstrates that it covers the use of the product collection taxonomy as it might evolve. It is true that the contract makes no mention of the 2000 master collection taxonomy. That's hardly surprising. One wouldn't expect that a 2006 contract would make reference to something that got named in 2008.
But would expect, if the license covered later editions, that the contract would say so.
No, actually you wouldn't, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. The contract contemplated a license to the product collection taxonomy. The grant of the license in paragraph 1 and the termination provisions in paragraph 2B each refer to a broad license to the product collection taxonomy. Now, it's important to note that at least twice, and this goes directly to your point, Judge Sykes, at least twice in the contract, but not in the grant, the contract refers to the pre-existing product collection taxonomy. So, for example, in the penultimate sentence of paragraph 2, it says, quote, client may continue to use the pre-existing product collection taxonomy perpetually as long as it continues its relationship with Big Hammer. Juxtaposition of the reference to the unlimited product collection taxonomy in the grant language in paragraph 1 and in paragraph 2B with the references to the pre-existing taxonomy elsewhere in the contract makes clear that the grant was not to the pre-existing taxonomy, as appellate counsel now would have it, but to the product collection taxonomy as it evolved. Now,
that language is susceptible to an alternative reading, it seems to me. I mean, yours is one reasonable reading, but there's more than one, and this is a 12B6 disposition.
It is clear from the allegations of the complaint that the parties regarded the work as an evolving product collection taxonomy. As Judge Tinder asked, EdgeNet continued throughout 2007 and 2008, as alleged in the complaint, to make the product taxonomy available as it evolved to Home Depot. Now, Your Honor, could the contract have been written to refer to the taxonomy as it evolved? In retrospect, certainly it could have been so written. But the fact is that there was no need to do that because, as paragraph 24 of the complaint makes clear, when it alleges that EdgeNet spent 60 person years in building its collection taxonomy since January of 2006, which is a year, almost a year before the contract, both parties understood that when it used the word product collection taxonomy, they meant the product collection taxonomy as it was evolving. This 2008 product collection taxonomy did not spring, you know, from the head of Zeus, you know, out of nowhere. Everyone understood that it was an evolving taxonomy. And so then,
how can that be resolved on a 12B6 motion?
I think this is at least as unambiguous as the issue that was resolved in that Kennedy versus National Juvenile Detention case that I cited to Judge Easterbrook. There is certainly, you know, one, you know, could make a theoretical argument that it should have clearly been stated as it evolves, just as the question in that case was whether the term use included make derivative uses. So, sure, in retrospect, you could always say that something could have been written more clearly, but I think it was unambiguous at the time, and that the parties understood product collection taxonomy to mean as it evolved. That's clear not only from the references in other parts of the agreement to product collection taxonomy as it pre-existed, but it's also clear from the course of conduct that the parties followed through 2000.
If you're getting in a course of conduct, aren't you well beyond 12B6?
No, because I'm using the course of conduct as it was described in the allegations of the complaint, Your Honor. So if you read the allegations starting at approximately paragraph 51, you will see, accepting them as true, and of course those allegations have a lot of melodrama about how Home Depot allegedly used a subterfuge, which has to be accepted as true, but for purposes of this case, but putting aside that gloss, it details a course of conduct which reveals that the parties understood that there was a single product collection taxonomy that was evolving over time, and that was what was being licensed. Okay, and it's interesting to note that during the, you know, while there was this ongoing relationship, they had the right to use the product collection taxonomy as it stood in December of 2006. That's because the content services agreement in Section 8.3 gave them the right to use future developed extensions, modifications, and redesigns. But the parties understood that once the relationship would end, then the content services agreement and the benefits that Home Depot got under the content services agreement would no longer be there. So Home Depot had to obtain and did obtain explicitly the rights to the product collection taxonomy as it evolved. Now, EdgeNet's principal response to this analysis is to point out that the second sentence of paragraph 3 of the contract states that Big Hammer is under no obligation to provide any updates to the project collection taxonomy. EdgeNet says that that's a Scrivener's error in the use of project. Of course, if it is an error, it occurs at least twice in the agreement. But putting that aside, what that sentence really means is that as of December 2006, EdgeNet was under no obligation to produce updates or modifications to the taxonomy. EdgeNet didn't want to obligate itself to provide updates or modifications. But if EdgeNet did produce any updates or modifications, then Home Depot would be entitled to them under the perpetual license given by the contract. What's key here, and I think Judge Sykes has asked the exact right question. It really comes down to what is the party's intent, and if you look at the juxtaposition in the contract between the taxonomy as it existed in 2006, as it appeared in some places, versus the sort of unlimited product collection taxonomy, and if you look at the allegations of the complaint, you will see that the parties understood product collection taxonomy to be an evolving document that Home Depot was getting. And, you know, could it have been written differently? Of course it could have, but that doesn't make it ambiguous, just as the failure to include the words "and use derivative works" didn't make the contract in the Kennedy case ambiguous. And indeed, it's worth noting that EdgeNet itself concedes that there was an unambiguous grant of this license. Now, given what has to be seen, I think, as the weakness of its separate works point, EdgeNet resorts to two additional arguments. First, it says that the license conferred by the contract was limited to the SAP Core retail project. That argument cannot stand in the face of the text of the contract. The grant is to the product collection taxonomy to be used initially for the SAP Core retail project. Elementary semantics suggest that the words "initially" connotes subsequent uses. If EdgeNet's counsel were correct, the word "exclusively" would have appeared instead of "initially." EdgeNet's argument on this point is flawed for yet another reason. If the license were exclusively for the SAP project, the license that EdgeNet purchased would not have been a perpetual license. It would have been a license for the duration of the SAP project, but it wasn't. Now, perhaps recognizing the linguistic failure of its argument, EdgeNet protests that it is inconceivable that given its investment, it would have licensed the product collection taxonomy as it would evolve for only $100,000. Of course, that argument ignores the fact that that's exactly what EdgeNet did, but there are at least three considerations that explain the $100,000 fee. First, in 2006, EdgeNet was trying to gain favor with and to cement its relationship with a significant client. It might well have offered $100,000 as a contingent license fee as a gesture of goodwill, or it might have set the license fee on the assumption that its service would be so good that it would always be retained by Home Depot. It also has to be remembered that EdgeNet was conferring a non-exclusive license. It retained the right to license the taxonomy to others. EdgeNet might have wanted to encourage Home Depot to use the taxonomy in order to promote EdgeNet's marketing efforts with third parties. Third, there is a substantial question about the copyrightability of the product collection taxonomy. EdgeNet might well have preferred to grant a reasonably priced license rather than face a legal challenge to the copyrightability of the taxonomy. But as I said, that is all speculation, but it certainly helps to explain why the $100,000 license fee does not change the conclusion that the grant was to the product collection taxonomy, which everyone understood was an evolving taxonomy.
Your argument doesn't rely on the district court's interpretation of the second sentence of paragraph 1 of the contract?
It does not. My argument does not rely on that at all.
That was a mistaken interpretation.
I believe that may have been a mistake. Of course, it's surprising that EdgeNet didn't make a motion to reconsider, but it is quite possible that he misinterpreted that sentence. I don't think he got the basic issue wrong. I think it was a very broad, unequivocal license to the product collection taxonomy, and we believe that the product collection taxonomy was understood to be an evolving work. EdgeNet's second argument was that Home Depot USA forfeited the license by not making the $100,000 payment in January of 2008, when Home Depot of Canada, a separate corporation, notified EdgeNet that EdgeNet would at some point in the future no longer be the data pool for the Canadian stores of Home Depot Canada. That argument has several flaws. First is that although EdgeNet's counsel now argues that the January 2008 action of Home Depot Canada somehow triggered an immediate payment obligation, the parties did not so view it at that time. On the contrary, the complaint alleges that EdgeNet continued throughout 2008 to make the product collection taxonomy as it was evolving available to Home Depot at no cost. As late as December of 2008, EdgeNet was making the product collection taxonomy available to Home Depot without any suggestion that an additional license was needed. The real triggering event that precipitated the need to pay $100,000 was the giving of notice in February of 2009 that Home Depot would be terminating the content services agreement, and it was at that time that Home Depot USA immediately tendered the $100,000 payment as required by the contract. Second, even if there were a breach by failure to make payment in January of 2008, that breach would have required EdgeNet to declare a breach and to rescind the contract. It never did. As Judge Tinder pointed out, it continued to perform under the contract and thereby waived any claim of breach in 2008. If there were some immediacy requirement, the immediacy requirement is not to pay the $100,000. You will not see in that agreement anything that says you must immediately pay the $100,000, although that is in fact what Home Depot did. And even if there were a breach, which there wasn't, that breach would give rise to an action for breach of contract, not for copyright infringement. I just want to summarize. I know I'm out of time, or I'm about to be out of time. But at the end of the day, EdgeNet has conceded that it unambiguously granted Home Depot a perpetual license to the product collection taxonomy as it existed in December of 2006. At a minimum, this court, therefore, should hold that as it existed in 2006, we have a license. But the post hoc arguments of EdgeNet's counsel that this license was exclusively for the SAP Core Retail project or was somehow forfeited when Home Depot Canada told EdgeNet that EdgeNet would not be its preferred data pool in Canada should not deprive Home Depot USA of the benefits of its license that even EdgeNet acknowledges was granted. Beyond that, despite EdgeNet Council's best efforts, the 2006 contract makes clear that Home Depot is entitled to use the product collection taxonomy.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Levenstam?
The arguments of counsel reflect why the dismissal on 12b-6 grounds was precipitous, because there is much going on here that bleeds off the record, and you need to understand this complicated situation. You need a full record. This point about initially, their point makes no sense, because if you take initially and you say that means you can start with this but you can do anything you want afterwards, well, what does initially mean then? Is working on the SAP retail project for one day before you go ahead and use this license for everything that you want to use it for, to copy our whole software, is that enough? Is 1 hour initially enough? Or how about a minute? The fact is that this perpetual The fact that this was a perpetual license didn't mean that the project was going to be perpetual. What it meant was that they were using our taxonomy to design into their financial records. And after they got through doing that design with the project, their financial records were always going to use our taxonomy. So they needed a perpetual license. It wasn't because they were then going to be able to do whatever the heck they wanted. Now, I respectfully suggest the court use a little common sense. If you've got to take our allegations as true on the facts, which you do on a dismissal motion, why did they hide from us what they were doing if they had a license? Why didn't they come out after they stopped Canada and pay us at that time? Why didn't they call us up and say, hey, look, we're copying all of your software pursuant to the license you sold us for, or you would sell us for $100,000, although we haven't paid for it yet, and we'd like a little help doing that. It's all under the license. None of that happened, and none of that happened because they were sneaking around behind our back, and after the fact, when we caught them, they ran over and said, oh, here's $100,000, and that license, by the way, that you gave us for that one little project now enables us to use your entire software, your entire store.
At what point in the chronology did Musial jump ship?
It was mid-2008. So it's after they stopped Canada, but before, you know, it was as they were warming up on stealing the infringing on the software. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Levenstein.
Will the court issue an order with respect to the supplemental?
Will give both sides 14 days to file supplemental briefs addressing the question of subject matter jurisdiction.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. The case will be taken under advisement when